The recording is a public record subject to disclosure. By continuing to be in this meeting, you are consenting to being recorded and consenting to this record being released to the public record requesters who may see you, your home, and your family members in the recording. Participants need to be mindful of what is within view of the webcam and within range of a microphone. Chair, the floor is yours. And Claire, I would ask you to just turn your camera off, please.
Oh, hold on.
Yeah, where's the, is it over there? Our screen is a little weird at the moment. Okay.
Thank you. In a virtual meeting like this, it is particularly important that we carefully follow Robert's rules of order. Therefore, please do not speak until you have raised your hand and been recognized by the chair. The chair will ask for a motion and second for each agenda item unless it is noticed for discussion only. Any member wishing to join the debate or move an amendment will also have to raise their hand and be recognized by the chair. Similarly, if you have some other matter to bring to the attention of the chair, such as a point of order or request for information, please use the raise hand functions. And so we are called to order. We do have a quorum, and that's recognized by the people in the Zoom. Here in the City County building with me is Supervisor Brenda Yang. Everybody else is appearing via Zoom independently. And the first item of business is the August 14th, 2024 minutes, but these were not in Legistar, so they were not available with the agenda. So there's no objection. We are going to not take that up at this time and postpone those minutes until they're properly noticed for an upcoming meeting. I don't see any objection. The next item would be public comment. I understand there's no registrants for public comment tonight. And now we are on to disclosures and recusals. This is the part of the meeting where members of the body should make any required disclosures or recusals under the city's ethics code. Does anyone wish to make any disclosures and recusals at this time? Not. I'll disclose that I'm employed by Legal Action of Wisconsin. Legal Action does receive city and county funds to provide civil legal aid to low-income people. I don't believe there's any item on our agenda tonight that would directly impact Legal Action of Wisconsin. So I don't think I'll need to recuse myself from any items. All right. Then we're on to new business. Item two, discussion on possible city or county budget recommendations. So because of conflicts and the difficulty in rescheduling, we did not meet in September. And I know folks have been very busy with their own budget processes. Certainly that's true for the county. We have received presentations over this summer from school district staff related to funding and budget issues, as well as City of Madison finance staff related to the budget issues facing the city. And since we've met, both the city and the district and the city have passed resolutions to put referendum questions on the ballot for voters. Because this is a public city-funded supported meeting, that's not an issue we can take up. But we can talk about the budget and impacts on the budget. So this is the space for us to have that conversation. And in the past, we have communicated ideas, thoughts, recommendations related to the city and county and I believe school district budget. For sure, city and county. I don't remember if the school district's always been included. But we can certainly do that again. So I will open up the floor to hear from any of the committee members about their thoughts on the budget and how it may intersect with some of the historic priorities of this committee, which I'll try to rattle off to spur conversation. Homelessness and affordable housing, digital equity, transportation, mental health, particularly school-based mental health, are four of the, and I think youth employment are the priorities that come to mind, but we've also talked more recently about you know, safe routes to school and things like that as well. So, and we've had discussions related to sustainability in the past too. So anyway, does anyone have any initial thoughts? Yes, Linda.
Thank you, Chair. I think I'm really thinking about how we educate more of our residents about the referendums or referendas, MMSD included. I know the city has done a lot. We continue to do a lot. We've held meetings. We're writing press releases. We're doing a lot of shows. But sometimes I just feel like there's still a lot of people who don't know about what could potentially be at risk if the referendum doesn't come to fruition or doesn't pass. For example, you know, you can look at the city's budget. We haven't spoken about things like library services here, but that's something that would affect the youth that we care about. And there are many other things that would be cut in the budget. So I guess for me at this point, I'm just more concerned about our residents really knowing about these referendums, whether it's the or referendas, whether it's the cities or MMSD. And I'm not sure what we could do on this committee. Maybe we could put things out in our various networks, but I just really feel like more education needs to happen personally.
Thank you, Linda. Would you, I know the, I believe the mayor's proposed, well, budgets, budget A, budget B, I don't know how they're being referred to, but we're just, I think, released, was it yesterday?
Yes.
So at the same time, I think there's been a lot of communication about what the budgets would look like based on the instructions given to city agencies related to needing a 5% reduction in the event the referendum did not succeed.
Yeah.
Is there anything else that is, you think, important for this committee to know? And I see Alder Tag has his hand up as well, so I'll go to him next. But Linda, is there anything else you want to like highlight in terms of specific issues related to the budget? Any sort of changes unique to this year, just beyond the general like difficult situation and the sort of what I understand to be more or less across the board cuts that would take yeah. place?
Well, maybe the other can later, but I was just thinking of things that are more relevant to to this committee, and we're all about youth, and you know, just thinking about some of the things that might be cut within city or the library. I'm not sure about parks. Maybe I think there are some cuts that could affect youth in parks. I would need to look at that closely. But I just wanted to bring that up as a way for us to maybe find ways to just ensure that people learn about it. In my position, I cannot say vote yes or not an elected official, but I'm passionate about people knowing about what is at stake.
Thank you. Yeah, Tang.
Yeah, I would encourage folks to go to citymadison.com/finance/documents/budget/2025, or just go to City of Madison, you know, Google citymadison.com budget and click through until you get to the 2025 operating budget. And you can just, rather than reading the whole thing, you could read the executive summary. But Linda is correct that it's important to get an understanding the impact that the failure of the referendum will have on essential services. And while it's not true that these are 5% cuts across the board, there are programs that are, that it does mean that there will be, you know, we won't be able to expand the CARES program to the extent that we've been trying to. There will be cuts, approximately 500,000 cuts to community-based organizations that provide critical services. There'll be reductions in transportation and libraries, and yes, in parks as well. Something like 8 of the city's ice rinks will be closed and shuttered. So it's not a pretty picture. It's going to be very challenging. Nobody, and I am, as an elected official, I am allowed to, you know, to speak of my opinion of, that it's very important that this passes. I am not, you know, lobbying or you know, manipulating people or telling them what they should do, but I can say that I support it. And I do. And I would encourage you to study this and have conversations with your stakeholders and whoever you're affiliated with, because I think the impact on our families and therefore on our kids will be profound if it does not pass. And
thank you, Tay. Can I ask?
And this would just be the first of it. Then we would again have to make similar draconian cuts the following year. Just we would still be up against the wall. So that's all I got to say right now. Thanks.
Can I ask you a question? When you say it's not true that it's 5% across the board, can you explain what you mean by that?
Yeah, what the mayor did in this round, every year with the budget, starting in the spring, the agencies issued their agency requests. But right. They do so based on kind of guidelines given by the mayor. And what the agency requests this year were to recommend cuts of what they would recommend that would cut their budgets by 5% from a cost to continue basis of what they were last year with some modest adjustments for inflation. That doesn't mean that if the referendum fails, that's what we're going to do, that we're going to implement all those cuts across the board. But they give ideas that can, you know, you know, we can then start kind of ranking and making priorities. We don't have to do them all at once, but over the next 5 years, if we don't get help from the state and no referendum passes, whether this one fails and we come back to the voters again, all of those cuts would have to be implemented, including things like closing Goodman Pool or turning it over to a private entity, which has never worked all that well, by the way.
I guess to clarify then, obviously the budget's not adopted. It was the executive budget's just proposed, and that just happened yesterday. And I understand that you might not have read all of it yet. But are there things that are, I guess what I'm trying to get at is like, has some of that prioritization reflected in the mayor's proposal? Or not?
Yes, I would say so. I would say so that she, that the mayor and Linda can attest to this, because she sat in more of these meetings and has been closer to the action than I have. But I'm confident that what is called Budget A, assuming that the referendum passes, does also require some cuts. People have to see that the referendum passing doesn't solve the structural deficit. It simply buys us time. The only thing that will solve the structural deficit is if the state legislature changes their tune regarding Madison and comes up with funding mechanisms and changes and adjusts the way they source municipalities. That $3.5 billion state surplus can be allocated in various ways. Plus, they can give permission to local municipalities to adopt a local sales tax, which they have denied, except for the city of Milwaukee. So, in other words, we're not out of the woods entirely if the referendum passes. It doesn't mean that, I mean, it means that we won't have to go to the voters again for at least 5 years if it passes, but we'll still be implementing cuts. We'll have to be creative. And by the way, we have been implementing cuts all along. This is what people don't understand. We have been doing more with less for years. For example, if based on the previous census, the one in the early 2010s or whatever, the last one, not the most recent one, if we had maintained the same ratio of employees to population, we'd have over 200 more employees on the city rolls. Actually, I think it's something like 217. But we have lots of positions have been left vacant. We've consolidated. We've asked our staff to do more and more with less resources. And quite frankly, we can no longer, there's no nothing more we can squeeze out of this onion. We're clearly up against the wall. And if the voters turn against the schools and the city, they will rue the day because they will have to endure changes that I don't think that they at this point foresee. So that's my stump speech about why I'm strongly supporting the referendum, the city referendum.
Other comments? One reason I asked is because I about priorities, and I know that the council and the mayor will be certainly talking about those, as you know, more after Election Day, particularly depending on what happens. And that's always a part of the budgeting process, but is that it seems to me that it's not equitable to implement a 5% cut you know, across all agencies, because some agencies have more impact on city residents' basic needs. And you know, are serving more vulnerable populations. And I think while it may be equal, to not consider that would not be equitable. So I haven't had a chance to look at the proposed executive budgets. I just read the newspaper article. So that's why I'm trying to understand, like, how will that happen? Because I think it should happen with a racial equity, social justice lens. And I did just prepare like four short bag bullet points for our discussion that maybe staff will share at some point. But that's one of them, is like, can we, for example, protect community development and community services when considering cuts, when we know that, you know, people experiencing homelessness, senior, like we just have some really important child programs through that office that would really exacerbate extremely low-income families that are already going to be hit in other ways with the end of rent assistance programs and other, you know, programs they've been relying on with these federal pandemic response dollars. So I guess that's kind of where I'm going with this, is I think that we should advocate for an equity, you know, focused decision making in these difficult, you know, exercises of budget priorities.
I agree.
Linda, yeah.
Go ahead. Other can go. I see him talking.
Tag, did you have more to add? Sorry.
Well, specifically, if you look at the executive budget summary, when it talks about cuts to the community-based organizations, a few are referenced, include that, as it states, it says, and I'm quoting, over 500,000 in funding will be cut for community-based organizations. And this is if the referendum does not pass. Community-based organizations that provide critical services like restorative justice programming, employment training, and funding assistance for early childhood programs. So those are three that are named, and I haven't gone and looked at in detail at the budget to see what other impacts there may be in the community services bucket.
Thank you. Yeah, Linda.
Yeah, Chair, thank you. I just want to note that the mayor did ask departments to present a 5% cut scenario. I have not particularly done the calculated the numbers to see if we actually took 5% cut from each department, but I suspect not. So I just don't want the our audience to be confused. People were asked to put forth potentially 5% cut, but I doubt that we took up to 5% from each department. And of course, as you all know, you're all in leadership positions, we have to balance what's important to who, right? So, I mean, most of us agree that community service initiatives should be protected as much as possible. But then there are people who also believe that we should have good bike paths because that's their medium of, you know, transportation, right? So I know you all understand this, but I'm just for the audience that might be watching this, is as leaders and a government, we have to balance all these different things. But certainly the mayor prioritized not laying off folks. You know, there were many, many meetings. We tried our best to not cut a lot of things or not propose cuts for a lot of things that will affect the community. Each department, when they presented their budget, had to talk about the racial equity and social justice impact and lens. So that is part of the budget process. We had Christy Kumar from DCR sitting almost all the budget meetings. So we ensured that we had that lens. So I think due diligence was taken in this process to really think about the impacts across different populations. But again, it was a very difficult process. Trust me. At some point, I think everybody was like fighting with each other. The deputies were like, don't cut my stuff, you know. So it was definitely a very difficult process, I would think, for everybody involved. So it's not a pleasant thing for sure.
Thank you. Yeah, I felt like I have had many conversations over the last week where nobody's happy. Other comments? Brenda is on the Personnel and Finance Committee of the County Board, and they will be hearing presentations. Our process is ahead of the city. So the county executive prepared her published her budget September 18th. We're trying to adopt a budget before the election. So everything got moved up, and then there's a number of holidays this month. So we actually, our committees have, I think all of them already voted on their recommendations. You know, not the budget, not the Personnel and Finance Committee yet. So they have the challenging task of trying to make everything balance out. So the county executive's budget instructions to agencies was it for cost to continue. So it did not require them to present any proposed reductions in their revenue and expenditures. So that said, there's not a lot of room for expansion or salary increases or contract increases for our, you know, contracting partners, unlike last year. So it's difficult because we know, because the county's costs for health insurance have gone significantly up, like a lot of employers, and our sales tax revenue has really kind of almost leveled off. So in the good years, we were really seeing a nice trajectory of increase in sales tax revenue. That is sort of plateauing. You know, that increase is not enough to help us with these other increased costs. So when the county executive proposed her budget, there was only $500,000 left before the levy limit was reached. So, and it did not include an increase in salary or an increase for cost of living for our partners. So, and that's because it's a needs-based budget. And I feel, but that's still hard because we are asking our community providers and our staff to do more with less. There are some good things, though, I think, that have been proposed and things that intersect with our priorities. I'm wondering, so for example, we have a new, we're building on some work that we're sort of far behind on, but building on some work, and Brenda's been a leader in this to support better language access to county government. And previously, last year, we had in the budget a language access coordinator in our Office of Equity and Inclusion. The year before that, there was a position put into the Human Services Department specifically for language access coordination. In this budget proposal, as it's being recommended to the Finance Committee, there would be an additional language access coordinator position, bilingual Hmong speaking, that would be in that Department of Human Services office, and two Spanish bilingual medical interpreter positions as well. There's a number of new staffers, Arabic speaking positions for the job center. I can't remember all of the additional bilingual positions that are part of the human services budget proposal, but it is exciting to see that issue being taken, you know, so seriously and really improving on. And I would turn it over to Brenda if you wanted to add anything about that, but.
Yeah, no, I don't really have anything to add, but I think you covered it pretty much. Yeah, we're trying to expand that. And I know with the city, you guys added 2 years ago, the three community connectors. We're trying to reach you guys and what you guys are doing in language access as well too, and make that more holistic, but also sustainable, you know, and see where we can go with that. Cause we want to obviously utilize our money as effectively as we can, so.
It was surprising to me. One of our bilingual economic support specialists was speaking to our committee on Monday, and he mentioned how, in terms of county departments, our human services department has 800 county workers in it, largest county department, but right now zero in-house interpreters, unlike public health, which has 400 employees and has four interpreters, and the courthouse, which has about 100 and has one interpreter. So like building that in-house capacity right now will be really helpful because it'll take some pressure off our language access staffer who ends up has been pulled into a lot of more critical emergency interpretation needs when, you know, our staff are dealing with level one child protective services interviews, you know, and things like that. So Anyway, I'm hopeful that all that will remain in the budget that gets adopted by the county board. But I know Brenda and I have talked about how maybe language access is an issue that this committee could help to elevate and maybe convene or coordinate across our different entities. Because what I've learned from Brenda is that we have things to learn from each other in this area, and maybe there's a way to do more by
Maximizing that.
yeah, combining efforts or coordinating in some way. So I wanted to mention that. And then another area that the county I've spent a lot of time on over the last couple months has been to implement some of the strategies in our Dane County Regional Housing strategy that the city participated in, and I think folks from the district and lots of stakeholders over a whole year at least worked with consultants and met to come up with this strategy. So it's public and it's available on the Dane County Planning website, but there's a lot of data in there, and there's a lot of kind of bold goals. We know, so anyway, increasing affordable housing is something I've worked on a lot, and the capital budget proposals out of the Health and Human Needs Committee on Monday include $30 million this year for affordable housing, $2 million for the Madison Area Community Land Trust, which provides permanently affordable home ownership opportunities, and $20 million for the low-income housing tax credit RFP process for new construction and affordable housing preservation, and then a new funding process we're initiating kind of based on the city's experience in housing with non-tax credit projects. So $8 million for projects that aren't the sort of standard, sort of investor-led large complexes that are often what the city and county are funding and WEDA are funding. So these smaller projects look a lot different. They're, more might be a co-op that's applying, might be a nonprofit that might have some other sorts of operating subsidy through a federal agency like HUD or rural development. And we've been really lucky to be able to learn from Julie Spears in the Community Development Office about how the city has administered that fund. And another thing we're kind of borrowing from the city is to extend the affordability requirement from 30 years to 40 years. So in addition, we're creating some new staffing positions in our housing infrastructure to help us get this money out the door. So I'm hopeful that these positions will stay in the budget. One is a new attorney to work on these housing development deals. Right now, there's kind of a bottleneck because the Human Services Department only has one attorney, and most of her time is going to these deals. And then there's additional funding for the Dane County Housing Authority, who is our lending partner on our affordable housing deals. And then two new housing navigators and joining forces for families. So that's really exciting because JFF is something that I think a lot of MMSD families connect with as are there are neighborhood embedded community social workers. So these housing program leaders are helping those getting referrals from those JFF mainline sort of social workers to work with families that have more sort of intense housing issues that end up taking a lot of time. And so because the JFF staff are really so open and available and doing a lot of things, like to work with one family on a particular housing issue, to be able to refer that to a housing specialist person is been really successful in getting people stabilized in housing or into housing. So that's pretty exciting because now there'll be four of those program leads supporting all, the JFF offices that are countywide. So Anyway, I don't know. Brenda, can you think of any other items of interest that the committee might be, you should share with the committee? Yeah.
I can't think of anything else. I think you covered it pretty
I mean,
good.
there's so much in the
There's a
budget, but
lot.
there's just like that's a lot of what we've been talking about. Yeah,
Yeah.
Linda.
I don't think you touched on this, but I feel like at some point in this committee, we've spoken about mental health in schools. And I'm just curious if the county, I know you support a lot of mental health related stuff. Just curious if there's any more new stuff this or
Yeah,
no.
that's a good question. I don't believe there's any new programs or new funding. I do know some of what was funded in this area has been funded with American Rescue Plan Act dollars. The county funded school-based mental health before the pandemic, I'm quite sure. But I think there was expansions and bolstering of programs with ARPA dollars. So there's those ARPA dollars, many of those programs have already ended, right? And then some will continue into 2025, maybe 2026 a little bit. But by and large, a lot of those funding streams, unfortunately, are just gone, and they're really hard to replace. And we're also dealing, and I'm sure folks in the city, I mean, I don't know about, as much about the school district, but there's major grant reductions from the Victims of Crime Act. So a lot of victim services have been seriously reduced by the State Office of Crime Victim Services and the DOJ because they just don't have the same federal revenue that they did before. So it's not just the ARPA dollars, that's for sure the biggest source, but I mean, it's well, certainly there are a lot of orgs in our community and the people they serve that are going to feel these impacts. Yeah, Brenda.
I do have something to add in regards to that. It's not for next year, but not like quite a direct connection to mental health. But last year, what I did is I also chair the UW Extension Committee. And so I created a program connection with MMSD, actually, where we call it the Career Pathways. And what we've done is so an attempt to help connect with high school students specifically, we piloted here at East High School first to connect students who come from low-income backgrounds but are confused about what they want to do with their future. The goal of it is really to address that social emotional skills that they're lacking because of COVID and they were in quarantine, right? But that's also connected to mental health, not directly, but also connected. And so I think that program, we're going to renew it again for, a next year. But what we're trying to address there is like the connection between careers and students who don't want to go to college, right? What are they going to do? So we created Career Pathways where like we have a coordinator who goes, she's located at East High School, and she's working with specifically students who are struggling and to kind of help them figure out what it is they want to do with their next step in life. And so once they figure that out, she helps them with their resumes and help fill them. And then in the summer, they connect with us at the county with a certain industry or a certain role that they want to do. Like, say, for example, a student who wants to be a social worker, right? But they don't know what that's like. So they get connected with that social worker, and then the MMSD actually pays a stipend for them. And so they get paid a stipend and they get to learn about that profession, whether it's something that they want to go into or not. And so that connects them with other adults too, that will bridge that mentorship component that I think young people need. And that also connects with the mental health component. So that might help. But like I said, the work that we're trying to do is to help build and elevate young people so that they don't feel as confused and to help build the skills that they need for professional life ahead.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Linda, I'm sorry, and Nichelle's got her hand up too. Are you, Nichelle?
Yes, thank you. I was just going to comment on mental health supports in our budget. We'll be moving to pass two budgets next month, a budget if the referenda passes and one if it does not. But for mental health, We have looked at our allocation around nurses, psychologists, and social workers as kind of key positions directly connected. So we have increased some FTE around nurses so that there's more nurse allocation in each of our comprehensive high schools. We also added some psychologist FTE and social worker FTE. And those for the psychologists and social workers, those were assigned to schools with kind of the greatest needs and highest student ratios. We continue to have a restorative justice coach, one for each of the comprehensive high schools. And then there had been a central office role that helps support all the other schools. And so that central office, one of the central office roles in restorative justice had been moved to the kind of temporary COVID recovery ESSER funds. And so we're making sure that that position is maintained. So that's back in our core budget. And then we also have a one bilingual mental health navigator. And that was something that we had started during the pandemic, and we have maintained that in our core budget. And I also know the district has written some grants and is in partnership with UW Health around developing school-based health centers. So that's mostly grant funded, so it doesn't really show up in our core operating budget, but I know that that work is also happening around really making sure young folks can access licensed clinical staff during the day with health needs and get, more accessible referrals and supports around mental health. So I just
Thank
thought
you.
I'd add that.
I will say one thing I know for sure that is continuing is the related to school support is the education around overdose. We're funding with opioid settlement dollars to the county. So Safe Communities Safe Communities Coalition has we funded last year programming throughout this school year around overdose prevention and stuff like that. So that's one angle and funding source. But those are good questions. I'd say like some of the newer things or other like position enhancements or kind of critical needs that were addressed in the human services budget have to do with adult protective services and dementia crisis stabilization. So the county response times for adult protective services was way too long. We really needed more staffing there to be able, people in crisis can't be waiting if you're a danger to yourself or others, or we need a much more responsive intervention. And this new dementia crisis stabilization unit would be at Badger Prairie. So it's not directly to youth, obviously, but those were some of the kind of critical needs that got bolstered or some attention in the human services budget. So I heard, let's see. That was really helpful, Nichelle, and I just want to make sure I understood correctly. You are voting in November.
We're voting in October.
Oh, okay. And currently, it's been proposed to continue with your general funding revenue. A couple positions that had been funded with ESSER funds, and one of those was a central office restorative justice
Yes,
support?
because we used to have two, and then during COVID recovery, I think one of the two was put onto the kind of the S was funded through ESSER. So we're just wanting to maintain that second position because
Okay.
the other RJ coordinators are directly working out of one of the high schools. You know what I mean? Each of the high schools.
Okay.
So this is the those two positions support the other middle schools. They go out and also support staff when there are like crises of sort of such in buildings. They also go out and support school communities when there are bigger issues. So it's pretty critical that we have those two roles to support the rest of the schools.
And the other one was a bilingual mental health
Navigator.
navigator. Okay.
Yes.
That's great. Do you think it would be helpful, or are there other things you think it would be helpful if the committee were to communicate, just support for, or do you think it's pretty solid or
Well, I was gonna say, I mean, I do think the mental health supports, feels pretty relevant and connected to our committee. And I would say generally, I agree with Linda around voters feeling informed enough about all of the referenda that they'll be voting on. I feel like similarly, I'm sure to the city, the district has been holding all kinds of referendum engagement sessions, trying to get the word out there. But I know that we just recently met with the editorial board, and I could tell from some of the questions there that, like what some of the questions or confusions still might be out there. So, some of which I think we were able to address, and then I think there are some things that I'm not sure we were able to necessarily address enough directly. So, yeah. So I'm just saying I'm in agreement with Linda. Like I don't know if there's any way that our committee generally can say anything relative to the proposed referenda that are on the ballot are, really important both to the district and the city, and that we hope that voters are really taking their time to get the facts, get the information, visit each of those the respective websites, look at the information, and because I don't think we have any more engagement sessions scheduled. So now it's really going to be on voters feeling like they can go to where the source of the information is. So yeah, I'm just hoping that folks feel like they've had an opportunity to get their questions answered, and understand kind of what's at stake.
So you'll be voting on two alternate, because the city's not voting until after, the council's not voting until after Election Day, correct? So you'll know the outcome when you adopt the final, when you adopt the budget, but the district will not. So you're voting on two.
Yes, and I'm sure the motion will have some language that's that indicates something about if the referenda passes on November 5th, we're adopting this budget,
Right.
the
The
version that
contingency.
has that, and something about if it doesn't, we're adopting the other.
We're kind of a small, intimate, conversational group tonight, but it's nice. I know that it's almost 6:30. There is another item on our agenda that Tark was
Which will require longer
seeking some
time.
input on. But I guess I'm wondering if I found just talking through some of this stuff to be very informative and helpful to me as a county supervisor and a voter and a committee member. But I'm not sure if folks committee members want to take anything further or consider, you know, communicating anything to any of our bodies like we've done in the past. I could go either way, I guess. I did prepare some bullet points. I don't know, Mary, could you maybe share those or email them out or maybe put them on the screen?
I can share my screen with those if that would be maybe the easiest.
Probably, and then the public could see it.
Okay, are you seeing the email? I don't know why it's not showing me.
Yes, we can see, I can see it over here on Zoom.
Okay,
I
great.
think there's one more. I think you need to scroll up a little bit.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
All right. So,
That
I mean,
work?
this is just based on like my list and my less informed knowledge of the city and the school districts stuff. So, and it's very general. So I don't know that it's all that great or meaningful, but I just thought I'd just, at least for the sake of discussion, throw out some points. And we could add or subtract or abandon this. I just thought I'd throw it out there for discussion. And I can't see you, so whenever you're done, you can tell Mary to take that off the screen.
The tag has his hand up, as does Linda.
Oh, okay. All right. So do you want to unmute yourself, Tag?
I'm unmuted. I do think it's important to acknowledge that we do the budget process is through the lens of racial equity and social justice analysis. And I do think it's worth reminding alders and board members or any or county board supervisors to keep it in mind, but it's also feels a bit it's kind of baked into our process already. So I'm just worried, and I have to say that, you know, we're like a month away from a little, you know, we're a matter of weeks away when council will be debating this. And the more appropriate time, I've said this before, is for to get ahead of this earlier, as early as, you know, late winter and early spring, to because that's when the agencies are actually forming their requests, and that's kind of where it starts. It often feels like when we make these statements at the end, they don't really have much impact. I'm not poo-pooing your effort. I appreciate your commitment to these principles. But I'm not aware that that the city is lacking in this regard. That said, there are issues where your choices need to be made among programs, and I do think it's important to consider the impacts of the choices that are made. But it's not, sometimes it's a choice might be between two good programs, but you can't do them both, not in a time of austerity. And if the referendum doesn't pass, we enter into a time of austerity. And it's just important to keep that in mind. So I'm not trying to say that this is pointless, but I want to share just openly that my impression after being on council for some years now is that we already do a lot of this. It's already baked into kind of our decision making. Not perfectly, of course. Alders have different priorities and different ways of actually coming to a final opinion about which programs they wish to prioritize vis-a-vis others. But I do think by and large, racial equity and social justice is the framework that we use, and it's not severely lacking in the process at the present time. Others may disagree. Linda, I wonder if you would agree with what I'm saying.
Absolutely.
If Mark would agree, if Mary would agree, who've been with the city longer than I certainly have, but I don't want us to just send a letter to staff or to the mayor or to alders, kind of with a statement that will not land well, because it'll come off as performative and not really speaking to, the process. Now, maybe if we talk about remembering that if cuts need to be made to really try to measure the impacts, minimize those on the folks who can least sustain them. But I think, again, people are looking at, there are two African-American alders on council who are not in favor of the referendum, and which is somewhat galling, because it's already been explained that due to the seniority process, the last hired will be the first fired. And because of our process of trying to get more people of color into the city employment, those kinds of cuts will fall disproportionately on people of color. Yet we have two alders of color, African Americans, who are not voting in favor of the referendum. So it's confusing. It really is. But Linda, I don't know if you have anything to add to what I'm saying.
You summarized the racial equity and social justice part so well. I think we've worked hard over the years to really bake that into our processes, like I mentioned earlier. I agree, like number one, number two, things that are really like core for the mayor. It's a lens that, as you all know, she carries through the budget processes. Number four really made me think about like the broader community approach to reducing harm when these types of funding situations happen. Particularly, I think of what United Way is going through. I feel like they're like a great convener in our community. They fund a lot of things, but even they are having issues. I saw Michael Johnson wrote today about his programs getting cut. But it just made me think that number four is something that is much broader than just MMSD City and County. But still, it is an opportunity with a new a county exec coming up, to still send a strong message that you as elected officials want the top executives to be working together going forward, which I think they are now for the most part.
Thank you. Mary, can you take that off screen now, please? Tarek.
Yeah, just since Tag mentioned my name, I'll weigh in. And I agree. I mean, as someone that has worked to like build those processes and kind of bake these things in, I think we do do a good job. What occurred to me, though, was, and maybe this is already done. I don't know in terms of how the bodies begin, but as, and not just for the city, frankly, for the county, for the school district, especially moving into hard conversations. I know that whenever I have a meeting, a conversation that's going to be challenging, there are times where I deliberately ground, in this is what we're here to do. This is what our values are. These are the decisions that we've already made in terms of what we think is important to us. And I could see there being value in having, even though I think that so many of the elected officials in different ways on each of these bodies carry that sentiment, that it can be important to set intention and to have a grounding focus as we go into difficult conversations and to use that as that center point, which I agree. I don't know that a letter is needed, but that might be something that each of the bodies might choose to do. That's all.
All right, thank you, Tarek. I appreciate that. Well, I guess I'm not feeling sufficiently motivated to further craft a communication to these three bodies in terms of trying to influence the budget processes as a committee. But of course, we will all be doing that in our own roles. I will say the fourth point about the year ahead and the impact related to the loss of ESSER and ARPA and other funding streams that affect our community and the MMSD families that we are wanting to support and advocate for. That is something that I think I would like a better handle on. And I know like the county ha we've done quarterly ARPA reports by resolution. Those were required. And so there is some, I think there's things we might be able to learn collectively from the programs that were funded, and it might be useful to know sort of like, yeah, this is why we wanted to make sure we sustained this one. This is a priority for us. This is working. You all should support this too. Or, I think there's stuff that we could all learn by looking at the funding. And there's also stuff like what, for example, the good things that happened and what did work. And maybe there's also some regrets, what we didn't do. And if this happens again, or there's another sort of big stimulus sort of bill, like how do we respond maybe more sustainably, for example, to address more root cause issues? So when funding is no longer there, like it's not just like ripping off a bunch of band-aids. If maybe, and this is something Nichelle and I can and the staff can talk about in terms of our work plan or in early 2025, maybe trying to dedicate some meeting time or even a special event, community event or something where more folks are invited to come in and the format is different cafe style or so, I don't know, but I'm just trying to think like maybe that's something we could do. It's budget related, but it's not like budget time decision. It's more thinking early, planning ahead and for the future and along the lines of what Tag said. And I also think it's important because the county is going to have a really tough budget year next year, maybe as bad as what the city is experiencing right now. I mean, we really, it's going to be a really hard year for us. And I think there's things we can learn from each other. And it would be good to talk about problems early and solutions early. So I guess that's my final thought about budget reflections and maybe looking ahead to how this committee is uniquely situated because of our composition to frame those conversations or bring people together around that. And I appreciate what you said, Linda, about United Way and stuff too, because I mean, it's certainly this is a conversation that should involve people outside just government institutions. So, all right. I'm wondering if we might consider moving the final item to our next agenda, and also something that maybe Nichelle and I can talk with staff about at our next meeting if we wanted to further like flesh out some further framing for the conversation. Selfishly, Brenda and I have another meeting that starts at 7. And so that would give us a little time to go to the bathroom. And
I have some people that's waiting for me downstairs to chat with them too. So, yeah.
Is there any objection to moving the second item, postponing that second item to our next agenda? Tarek, can you live with that?
Yeah, of course. I think that this conversation is just if it's helpful to committee members in terms of figuring out how they want to prioritize topics of interest.
Yeah, it's kind of a sort of decision planning tool, and something that certainly chairs can use too. So great. Well, if there's nothing else, then is there any objection to adjournment? Seeing no objection, we are adjourned. Thanks, everybody, for all your hard work. See you next time.
Michelle and Heidi, can you stay just a moment?
Yeah.
Seems like our next agenda is set in terms of the next item and then any budget updates.
Yeah.
Right?
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So then we don't need to meet again about the agenda. Budget updates and the last item, which is the... Okay, cool. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Heidi. We hope you have another good meeting.
Thank you. We'll have some email communication in between, okay. Right? Anything. I'm just trying to think if there's...
You're muted, Tark.
Maybe I should... prep a little one pager or, you know, just something to, whatever that for a fruitful item. You know, I don't want to like be repetitive or, you know, like waste people's time. So, okay.
Yeah. It sounded like you wanted to flesh out a little bit more about how we have that conversation, which we can do via email or decide to have that conversation.
Sure. Sounds good.
Okay.
Thank you.
See everybody.
Good night, everybody.
Bye. Gotta figure out how to turn this.